for people who enjoy real conversations. It's Naked Monday with David Temple.
Hi, folks. I'm David Temple, and this is Naked Monday. My guest today is a very special gal. Anyone who talks about her speaks to her enthusiasm, genuine warmth, and approachable style. If you met her on the street, you would feel it immediately. She has over 25 years of experience in business development with a focus on turnaround strategies for mid-sized companies. Her most recent endeavor is working as the estates. Yeah, that's with an S. That's plural. That's estates manager for a who's who tech billionaire. Her strategic focus and communication savvy has been instrumental in my rise as an author. She's beautiful. She's talented. She's a mother, a grandmother. And did I mention my beautiful wife, Tammy Temple?
Aw, thank you, David. I'm so genuinely excited to be here.
It's a perfect kickoff to the show, I figured. I mean, a lot of people would say, well, it's your wife. I'm like, yeah, only the single most important person in my life.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's been glorious watching you from the sidelines as you've moved through this part of your life, really elevating yourself as an author and a writer and everything that you've been going through the last 5 years to make this your full-time career.
It has been a road and a lot of fun along the way, and thank you for your support.
Well, I am your biggest fan. I'm probably the most loyal fan. Because I immediately think of Barb, your sister. She's incredibly loyal to you and supportive as your partner in crime on your writing and editing. However, I would agree with you. I've been along for the ride, and I think it's only fair. I help you kick off Naked Monday.
Yes, you actually came up with the title, the name. It was on a Monday, and you're standing... Well, you finish the rest of the story.
Well, for people that are not actual stalkers and are familiar with the floor plan of our home, when we finish a run, we generally come through the front door and go into the garage because that's where our washer and dryer is. We toss our running clothes into the washer and dryer, and then we beeline for the shower. We had just finished a run. We came into the house. We pulled off our running clothes. We were standing in the hallway, both naked, and I looked at you and said, "Hi, welcome to Naked Mondays," or Naked Monday. And then we both looked at each other and said, "That should be a podcast."
Yeah.
And then we talked about all the reasons why it was the perfect podcast.
Transparency.
There's no requirement for nakedness.
No.
Except when it comes to being vulnerable and speaking truth and all those challenging issues.
Yeah. The title of itself just makes you remember it. You're not going to forget the title. So there's that.
That is true.
Yeah. And it'll always make you wonder why call it that.
And so when it's out there on Apple or Stitcher and all the various places where it will be posted, it is engaging. People immediately go, "Naked Monday. What's that about?" So even if you don't hook them and keep them, at least you'll get people engaged to take that next step and find out what it is all about.
Want to take a little trip down memory lane?
Sure.
Remember that?
So sweet.
And doesn't it take you back to like...
I want a cocktail.
Whenever we heard that song, we knew it meant splashy cocktails and fun conversation.
It was Pavlovian.
It was.
Gin, what?
Yeah.
Fever tree? Where?
We have a new theme because it's a new show title, and this is the new...
Feels like a late night DJ talk show, you know what I'm saying, baby?
It's a smoky sound.
Give me your best. Give me your best late night talk show. Sexy voice, I'm going to shut up. Give it to me.
Here with Dick and Jane.
What kind of music do you play on the Dick and Jane Show?
Smoky jazz.
Who's your sponsor on the Dick and Jane Show?
Handy wipes for those spontaneous moments.
Funny.
Oh, candy wipes. You know, if there isn't that sponsor, we're going to make sure there gets to be one.
I don't even know what a candy wipe is.
Is it anything like, what was that gel that you used to use back in? Some kind of lube, something lube.
Lube names. I'm blanking out on lube names.
Okay, doesn't matter.
I just remember they were disgusting tasting.
Oh, so it's something that you taste? How did that work?
That's a whole different podcast.
So I'm sitting here listening to a podcast yesterday that I've recently gotten turned on to, which is Smartless. Featuring Jason Bateman and
Sean Hayes and Will Arnett.
And they are absolutely fall down hilarious in and of themselves. I've got a wicked man crush on Jason Bateman, and for all the right reasons. Sean, I knew from, you know, sitcoms, but I had no idea he was that funny and that fast. And Will, as you tell me about, they met on Arrested Development, he and Jason.
I don't know if that's where they met. Oh. That's where I became engaged with Will Arnett, was watching Arrested Development. Super funny.
Yeah, apologies that I have only seen like the first couple of episodes, but I'm going to go back and watch it now. But he's hilarious. He's Canadian. I didn't know that. Anyway, so I started listening to this, and I was cackling out loud, walking down the street, AirPods in, and just laughing silly. Robert Downey Jr. was the first episode I heard. And I thought, man, how long they've been doing this? Do you know they've had like 6 episodes, and within those 6, they've shot to like number 3 in podcast world?
They're funny. It's quick. It's 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's, I can understand that. They don't go down a rabbit hole for too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a quick wit, but yet you walk away and feel like you got to learn a little bit about somebody,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, even walk away learning a little bit about what they're talking about.
Kamala Harris was this morning. She's brilliant. What a great first female vice president she will make. Vice president, period. But I'm like, just brilliant woman. And the way she thinks and explains makes everything so understandable. But the Robert Downey Jr. was, you know, it was like 4 boys in their treehouse at 9 to 12 years old just going at it. It was so fun. And then Will Ferrell was the next one I listened to. And Will is just, he's just a comic genius. Insane.
I would say, having listened to the Robert Downey Jr. podcast, as a girl, I felt like I had a sneak peek into, you know, a little boys club that I would normally not get a sneak peek into. So I learned a few new words. And
what's one that sticks with you?
Let's just say, if anyone is interested, jump into Smartless.
Yeah.
With Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Sean Hayes, Will Arnett. They can maybe learn some new terminology, maybe not. Maybe I'm just the naive one that hasn't heard, you know, some of the stuff. But it was really funny and engaging, and I'm a huge fan of Robert Downey Jr. too. And mm-hmm. you know, I just like his outlook on life.
He has been through a lot, and he really impresses me as being someone who has done the homework to try to curb the demons, quiet the demons, did a little bit of jail time, which I did not know about. I know he got arrested for some stuff, but I didn't know he did jail time. And but a lot of wisdom in there, and seems very mellowed out and grounded with time.
He's an example of what Naked Monday is. He just speaks his own personal truth. He you know, I think you get to a point, and we talk about this a lot, where you get to a point where there's just no need for a secret.
Right.
Here are my battle scars. If those battle scars can help you and me sharing them and having a conversation with you, then so be it. But I'm not at this age going to move through the world trying to pretend that I am where I am and I got here unscathed. It's just not reality. And I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy listening to someone like Robert Downey Jr. is because he's not trying to put on any airs or be anyone that he's not. He's very open about his life and his experience.
I was listening as I went out to get us some burritos, breakfast burritos at Pipes, our favorite place. I was listening to Maya Rudolph from Saturday Night Live. I thought she was funny on scripted television, but when you hear it and unscripted, when she got on the show, the opening comments, it took...
You learned a little vocabulary on the girl side of things weren't necessarily tuned into.
She was talking about having four kids and the elasticity is gone. She said it's something like a
garbage bag.
Oh my God, she's so funny. And I think the magic to some of these comedians like her and Will Ferrell is the way they just throw things away. The way they say something and just like, well, it's like a garbage bag, you know, la la la. Because if you try to punch it, it's not nearly as funny.
Right.
Oh my God. Anyway, reason I bring up other podcasts is, you know, I've been in radio since my very first radio job was 1976. I think it was the fall of 76. That's all I ever wanted to do was radio. And so after I finally retired around 2000, I promised myself I was going to do a podcast because I was actually toying with podcasts. So this would have been 2000, 1999, 2000. And I never did. I've got all these boxes and boxes and boxes of shows from really phenomenal interviews over the years. And they're in storage that we're paying for every single month since then. And so then I'm just watching the popularity of podcasts coming up and I'm reading some stats and I did not realize that as of this year, first April of 2020, there were over 1 million podcasts. Meaning just 2 years ago, there were 500,000. So they've increased 500,000 in just 2 years. And there are something like 30 million episodes of podcasts out there. And so I think what I did was I was finding myself going, what have I got to say that nobody else is saying? And that kind of comes back to the Naked Monday motif of, it's just about, I've always enjoyed the art of conversation and just real conversations. You know, not somebody, and a lot of times when I was doing radio shows, William Shatner comes to my mind. He was on the show and I thought, this is really cool. We got William Shatner on the show. And all he really wanted to do was push this book he had written. And their handlers, publicists, made sure that we knew that keep the conversation going toward that book because that really is interesting. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And this was back in the day when I'm like, no. And whatever you do, David, please don't mock William. Don't do the impersonation of him. He hates that. So, of course.
It's the wrong thing to tell you.
So I get on within 2 minutes. I'm doing an imitation of him and talking about anything but the book. And you could just hear him being cordial, but then try to steer it off. Anyway, point being that I'm just glad to be back in doing this. And the Dave and Tammy Tour podcast was really what reignited it all. Cocktails and Conversation. I mean, that just, when we played that piece of music, it just reminded me of how beautiful all that was.
Those were really, really sweet times. And these are equally as sweet.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the Dave and Tammy Tour podcast, and I love our coffee and conversation. I love our cocktails and conversation, and we have those every single day. So to sit here and put something together and help you launch Naked Monday, which is all about you and your writing and this next phase of your professional career, is very exciting for me.
Thank you.
So what are if you had to pick three favorite podcasts out of these millions, and by the way, it's like there's a book for every person, there's an author for every person, there are several podcasts for every person. I think we all kind of attach to what we're trying to either escape from or learn or engage. So if you take those points, meaning, hey, I want to escape. This is my podcast for escaping. Hey, I want to learn something about my craft. This is where I go. hey, I want to learn something about one of my passion points or one of my hobbies. These are podcasts that I turn to. What would some of those podcasts be?
Well, I love Mark Dawson's self-publishing podcast because, you know, he's gotten so popular that he's able to bring in a host of really substantial artists and writers primarily. And I've learned a lot. James Blatch co-hosts that with him. Fortunately, as far as learning, I mean, that's kind of my go-to. I like Dave Asprey for the guy with Bulletproof because we're kind of biohackers after a fashion. We're always into fitness and good health and nutrition. But I really do find myself more and more because I'm always researching books and always researching how to become better at any particular aspect of my career, how to write better blurbs, better pitches, et cetera, synopses, queries. Because I'm constantly shoving my brain full of that every day, that's why I get so excited about Smartless, for instance, because it's just three guys acting like three guys sitting around having fun and laughing. Joanna Penn is really, really smart. Another gal out of the UK. I mean, brilliant and a prolific writer. Love to have her on the show one day. Golly, I've probably learned more from her than anybody because she gives all of her information away. It's really amazing and so kind. I don't listen every day, but I listen frequently. Those are the ones on the top of my head. Did that answer your question?
It did.
Yeah. I would love to be a resource in some form or fashion in the future for writers and to, I think my angle would be this. If you want to learn the mechanics of things, there's plenty of people to go to. If you want to learn how to query an agent, there's plenty of people going to because I'm going to one right now and studying with her. But I'm kind of more along the lines of encouraging you because encouraging writers because it's such a tough business. I was saying to you the other day about, and I was mentioning this to my sister on a conference call about how tough this is. And the toughest part about writing is probably, especially somebody who's been in show business, on the radio and in TV and in films and surrounded by a lot of people. To then be completely solo, creating your whole world by yourself, and then having, well, like, for instance, you to bounce it off. But it's an insular world. And the toughest thing is a little bit of the solitude and then the wondering. This is the big wondering, is it any good? Every day going, were those pages good? Was that chapter any good? Will anybody read this? Will anybody buy it?
The lack of immediate feedback would be challenging. And then I have watched you with this part of it. And initially, I was a great person for you to gain feedback from. And I had a lot of credibility. And then the longer we were together, and once we got married, then I lost credibility because I think you would mention to me, yeah, but you're my wife, or yeah, but what else are you going to say? And for you to not have a group of people that you can turn to or where you're getting regular feedback or you get to a point where you have a base level of confidence that, you know, I have my audience and I have my people that feed my work and I know I'm good. Because I have all of these particular things to show for it. But people that are your encouragers, now Barb is really working closely with you and you have really wanted her feedback and her honest opinion because she's legit, a PhD in English.
Yeah.
Holy balls. That's someone who has strength and courage and determination and they have to have a passion for the English language to get a PhD in English, as far as I'm concerned. So for her to be able to work with you and help you move through that, as you gain more confidence and you build your audience so you can move through your writing and your when you release a book feeling like, hey, I know I have my people. And my people enjoy my work. They enjoy my style. I'm not for everyone. I get that. I'm going to have people that might be a naysayer here or there. But until you get to that point, the people around you that are encouraging you, it's challenging because I know you look at me and you've said it before, dismiss my feedback because I'm your wife. What else are you going to say, Tammy?
I'm going to say that that is partially true.
Yeah.
But I'm not wholeheartedly true. Mm-hmm. And that's no put down. It's familiarity. And it's just like, I mean, if a particular chapter just sucked balls, you would go, and you've done this before, honey, you do it much better than that. You'd say more like, you know what? This story, to use that phrase, doesn't really drive this story forward. Mm-hmm. And what do I do 9.5 times out of 10?
You edit it.
Remove it. If it doesn't drive it forward, then why have it?
Well, I do believe that you take my feedback as it relates to that type of feedback. But when I look at you and say, this is great, this is really good work, you take it in and it only fills the tank so far, because your little guy here in the back of your head, your subconscious, is saying, yeah, but that's Tammy. Yeah, but she's my wife. That's what I'm saying.
Gotcha. Okay. That probably is predominantly true, not wholeheartedly.
But it's Naked Monday, so yeah. You can expose your
That's truth right.
I will at the table in the Temple Treehouse.
Yes. I will take off my pants metaphorically and expose myself.
Open your heart, babe.
Yes, exactly. Well, and I think, you know, it's when we were in radio and you start off in a tiny, let's face it, my number one market was Lynchburg. That's where I started. The town I grew up in, population 84,000. And at the pinnacle of my career, I was in New York City, a few more than 84,000 people in that city. And so there's a certain confidence that goes with that, you know, because you can't, you know how hard it is to be, you know, one of those on morning show in New York. But when you haven't had, I mean, I've been writing now for what? Writing on and off since, 2009, when I wrote the first book. But I think it was this last book that I went, okay, I've got the chops. And you really liked it. And then going to your point, then I shared it with friends and family. And everyone says, well, of course, don't share it with friends and family, because what are they going to say? But they loved it. And then all of a sudden, I started getting feedback from people outside of that going, oh my gosh, I can't wait for number two. That's when it kicks in and you go, oh, okay, maybe I can do this. And it doesn't make any sense intellectually.
Well, sure, it makes sense. You were at the pinnacle of your radio career you held that level for many years. You were at a place that probably anyone in radio would want to be. It's a coveted spot that not many people can hold that title, and you did, for a long time. And when an industry changes and shifts and you move on and you try to create that same level of success in another entertainment world, where again, you're vying for very few spots and you have a lot of people that are climbing that same ladder, it's not easy to attain. So when you do that now twice, and now on your third time, mm-hmm. It's not like you're choosing to be the best postal carrier in little old Encinitas as your gold star. Right. You want to be a New York Times bestseller, and you want to do that in the world of crime and thrillers and all of that, where, you know, there are a lot of people that are writers, published, self-published, and you're going down this road with a very full, clogged freeway, trying to reach the destination that all of those other people around you are trying to reach. So that has to be daunting. It has to feel at times like, what in the world was I thinking? But what I would say to you is, from the moment you told me in November of 2015, if I had a year and money were no object, I would want to write, you've done nothing but write, and you've done nothing but receive positive feedback on your writing, your style, your storytelling ability, the way that you craft dialogue. So I feel like you're climbing Mount Everest, and taking one step at a time with this community that's doing nothing but helping to carry the load with you, for you, stand beside you. And when I step back and see that, it's super easy to support you because you're a great storyteller. You're a great writer. And you're an intellectual writer. I feel like when I read your work, I've been to that place. And when I go to that actual place and I see those actual businesses or those actual locations, it's exciting. It makes me feel like, wow, I was a part of that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that many people feel that way based upon, however, what do you have, 30 Amazon, 31 Amazon reviews? Also comment on that. So, you know, to be at a pinnacle of an author status, it's not going to happen overnight, and you wouldn't appreciate it as much if it did happen overnight.
No, I wouldn't.
But you're certainly making huge strides.
Thank you, my number one fan.
I hear Play Misty for me in the background.
But for an entirely different reason.
Lynchburg. You mentioned Lynchburg. Yeah. That is a hub of controversy right now that you, you're one step, one degree of separation from that little bottleneck?
Yeah, funny you should mention that. Yeah, Jerry Falwell Jr. and I went to school. I used to flick him on the back of the ear in class. Has turned out to be getting a lot of attention of late for reasons that are peculiar and somewhat naked.
Nice pull.
Thank you.
Naked Monday with Jerry Falwell Jr.
Yeah. I don't think he'll be on this show. I'm going to just take a stab at that. Growing up in that little town was sweet. Of course, keep in mind, we moved there in 63, so early 60s, until the early 80s. And it's a tiny little town. It's not quite as small as your town was. How many people?
Where we had the Jell-O reunion? That town is 700. Outside of Madison is a little town called Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, and that's where I went to junior high and high school.
Gotcha.
And that town had about 3,000 people. I'm not sure what the population is now, but we did have a couple of stoplights, but it was small.
Where Jerry, and I won't spend much time on this, but where Jerry messed up, probably one of the places that I've just heard recently, is that, you know, he was an attorney. That's really kind of how he came about. And he bought a lot of real estate, a lot of real estate. And he bought some of that real estate with money that I think, you know, kind of channeled through different, came through different channels, et cetera.
I'm just curious to see where all of that unfolds. You know, I take no joy in watching someone's personal life collapse. It's one thing if you go through hard times in private, but to have your world collapse in front of the public, I think would be horrible. So I take no joy in whatever's going to come his way. I'm just curious to see the depths of his arrogance, if that's the right word, stupidity, entitlement, whatever those words are.
Those are all good words.
Yeah.
And they really do serve that. And his father was such a humongous personality.
But integrous from everything that you shared.
Super. The independent fundamental Baptist minister, Jerry Falwell. Whether love him or hate him, he did what he said he was going to do, and he didn't do much of what he shouldn't be doing.
I followed that.
Thank you.
He was a fan of yours, clearly a supporter.
We did some business together way back in the day.
And he was a supporter of your father.
Big fan of my dad. Yeah, dad was Jerry was certainly the bigger dog in the yard back in that day, but my dad was superlatively respected by all.
Well, he probably, it sounds as though, I know your dad. It sounds as though your dad probably had very firm opinions and beliefs. And it sounds as though Jerry Falwell had very strict codes of how people around him needed to operate.
Yeah.
And that can make or break relationships and certainly create critics and enemies.
I hope you don't get whiplash as I change channels. But how about my beautiful wife turning this on? Tammy and I watch a lot of serial television, not network television, but, you know, on demand and so forth. And so the other night, after watching series after series and binge watching, just anything you can possibly think of, I said, you know, let's find a new show. And my wife found a fabulous show. That's the good news. The bad news, over. It was over so fast. But what was the name of the show?
Young Waterston or
Wallander?
Young something. It started with a W.
Yeah, Wallander, I think.
It was a Swedish production.
Yeah. Brilliant show.
Yellowbird Productions,
yeah.
The story took place in Switzerland or Sweden? One of those S countries.
Just a great show. Production quality, good writing.
Yep.
Good acting.
Yeah.
Just love good stories, don't you?
Nice that there's Apple and Amazon Prime and Netflix. There's so many content providers that there are options. Interesting, though, with all the options, there are still a small percentage of really engaging, good quality material out there.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that we've got all these cable channels and we've got Netflix and Apple and Showtime.
HBO.
HBO.
Can't on demand. See a baseball game to frickin' save our life.
What is, let's go down that road. Why in the world, this has been absolutely a nail in my foot, not being able to get the LA Angels on a respectable time commitment consistency, for crying out loud.
I don't even know what that means.
So we're going back and forth to Cox Cable. Yes, we can. No, we can't. Yes, we can. That's what I'm trying to say.
Fox Sports West, we originally thought we had hit the jackpot because they allegedly broadcast the LA Angels. And on our
allegedly
live TV guide or live guide on the TV, it would always show when the Angels game was right. going to take place. We obviously knew when the Angels game was going to take place because we're so plugged into them. And then, lo and behold, we'd have the world around us shut down. We'd have dinner all together. We'd be ready to watch some good baseball, only to have Nordic lumberjacks and the competition. Am I making?
You didn't, actually.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be the world of poker.
Oh yeah,
first, but
world
then
world of poker.
Yeah,
that was there too.
World of poker and
Nordic lumberjack Nordic contests. Lumberjack. Yeah, let's be real here.
Yeah,
if our complaint is the fact that we cannot get the LA Angels on our 68 frickin' inch TV with surround sound, like boo hoo. we have many other options to follow the team. From the complaint zone, we can pump the brakes on that. It was just annoying because you would think Cox Cable
right.
and their technicians and service provider people could at least give us an answer as to why we weren't seeing live and in focus what they were
promising
to deliver. Again, what I've found since we entered the world of COVID madness is that as much as people are trying to be on their A game, it's just not easy for people to be on their A game for all the reasons that we're all dealing with. So,
and how are the Angels doing?
Well, they're not last in their league, so that's good, or their division. I haven't had a chance to talk to Tim, my brother, to get an idea of just, like, Joe, whenever you watch his post-game wrap-up, he'll always have a gold nugget, even if it's a loss. He'll say, well, we lost, however, these are the positive takeaways that we're seeing. You know, they're building a team. They're trying to create unity. They're trying to excel in a world that's just not normal. And none of these baseball players, nor anyone in our world, has had to move about and apply this level of restriction to their lives before. So I think the fact that they're out there, they haven't had to shut down their team. None of their games have been shut down as a result of their behavior, is just a testament that they're professionals trying to do their best in an environment that's challenging.
And can we, so that we don't gloss over your brother, can we just share with our audience who your brother is? That'll give us a little bit of backstory.
So Tim Buss is the quality assurance coach for the Los Angeles Angels. Prior to this year, he had, his title was strength and conditioning coach for the Chicago Cubs from 2001 into 2019. Pretty incredible title to not only get at the age of 24 or 25, but also a pretty incredible title to hold on to in Major League Baseball with one organization, running the majors, running the minor leagues, strength and conditioning programs for as long as he did. And he and Joe connect. Tim is an incredible mentor. People, they are attracted to him because he's just a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, and he just wants to make a positive influence on every person he runs into every mm-hmm. single day. You heard it on our last podcast with
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his daily goal is. I just want to make someone else's day better as a result of them crossing paths with me. And so when you're dealing with young players who are new to the world of Major League Baseball and they've kind of been catered to their whole entire life, and now they're standing in front of 40 and 50,000 fans and they have all this pressure, what I have watched and what I have listened to is his ability to really help them grasp the reality of their professional situation, but also kind of grow up
mm-hmm.
as a guy. Some people you can touch and make that difference, and other people are already touched and you'll never be able to touch them. And they just kind of go on their wave of entitlement or ego behavior, mm-hmm. based behavior. But for the group of people that are really interested, Tim, well, there's a New York Times article on him and his abilities and his training style that came out, I believe, in 2016 or 2017. And it really speaks to his philosophy, too, and his impact on people.
He is one of the most incredible guys I've ever met. When you meet him, he makes you feel like you're the most important person in the room.
Yeah. He's awesome in the full definition of that word.
Yeah.
Person.
Bussy. We got to get him back. He said he would be back on the show.
Yeah.
The last time we were, that was Requeza. We're at the kitchen bar and we were a couple of G&Ts in, I believe.
You guys were drinking St. Archer Blonde.
Oh, yeah. My wife has the most amazing memory of anyone I've ever met in my life. That is not, if she wasn't here, I'd say it. You have the most phenomenal memory. What you can remember and the volume you can remember is staggering. I can often not remember what I had for lunch yesterday, as cliche as that is. And you can remember, what did we celebrate yesterday? And you remember, she remembers every little highlight in our relationship and what was yesterday.
Yesterday, 5 years ago yesterday, I was sitting at a baseball game in Philadelphia. The Cubs were playing the Phillies, and David sent me a text. He was on his way to a birthday party. And this is, he and I had been communicating by email over the summer, just very light and loose and kind of hovering. I wasn't really grasping the fact that he was interested in me. And So I'm sitting at this baseball game and all of a sudden this text comes across my phone and he said, I'm about ready to go into a birthday party and I'd give anything if you were on my arm tonight. What are you doing? And I was obviously very taken by that sweet gesture. I love celebrating those moments.
Yeah,
it's just such a sweet and innocent time.
Well, this has been a really good introductory to Naked Monday, if you ask me. Yes, it feels a little bit of Dave and Tammy Tour podcast, but that's kind of its magic for those who followed us on that show.
Yeah. I think some of the things that we were going to talk about was just, you know, where you feel beyond your writing that you were exposing yourself or being vulnerable and how you felt that could help writers, mm-hmm. other people that are trying to spin their craft. And that crosses all forms of just behavior, period. How to be vulnerable and be okay with it.
This is going to sound probably not come out exactly right, but that's why I want to talk to anybody and everybody who's in the process. Would I love to talk to Don Winslow and Meg Gardner and Harlan Coben, and I could go on and on and on, sure. But I'd like to talk to anybody about anything that is in their process of writing, because it is a lot of people just don't get heard or don't have a platform yet or are in process on their platform or would love to get a little exposure or want to know. I'm not a big fan of the phrase tips and tricks per se, but would like some of those insights that I have maybe garnered through the years. I mean, when I stop and I think that I was self-publishing in 2009, which was pre-Kindle massive launch. That was about 2010, 12, I want to say, where it really took off. And if I'd been really paying attention and wasn't trying to have another career and chase other things down and really dove into it like I should have, I probably would have a much bigger success right now. But that's neither here nor there because I am here now. But back to your point.
Well, you also wrote a book, turned it into a screenplay,
and
gathered.
Yeah.
No, you didn't just. And then I made a movie. No, it took you 2 years to raise money mm-hmm. from anyone you possibly could that believed in your vision and in your abilities to bring this movie to life and then to be able to distribute it. So you didn't just, hey, I'm out here writing.
Yeah.
That was a monstrous endeavor. And for anyone who is interested in filmmaking, you don't, even with David's history and his resume, you don't just make a movie. You have 300 people that you've scraped together who are carrying numerous jobs, and you're working 14, 15 hour days over the course of 2 or 3 weeks trying to put the best product possible together. So then you stay true to a budget and you're accountable to your investors. You edit the product so it's the best it can possibly be, so you can attract the right distribution company. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, you realize the first distribution company, which would be like finding a pot of gold.
Right.
Oh my God, I found someone who is going to distribute this sucker, only to dig through the weeds and realize I am going to be raped and pillaged if I actually go down this road. So let me rewind, untangle this, and do the best I can to walk away, and then to be able to find another distribution company that actually did do right by you and is actually promoting the movie. And the movie is in 111 countries around the world, and it's on every streaming capability app, Amazon, Hallmark, PureFlex, all of these places. That is a huge endeavor. No one just does that. It's kind of the same thing when we talked about wanting to become a New York Times best writer. Okay, well, there are 3 other million people sitting on the 405 with you.
Right.
Trying to get to the same destination. Well, when you look at movies and writing and creating and bringing it to life and selling it and distributing it, you kind of were going down that same road. You had three other million people sitting on the 405 with you trying to sell their movie, to get their movie out there, to get their movie in the pipeline. And you didn't have the streaming services that you did at the time. You were in the world of DVDs and Christian bookstores and Walmarts of the world.
Yeah.
So the fact that you were able to make your movie, get it out there, pay your actors, pay your support crew, and be supported by a group of investors who believed in you and believed in your message. And now to see it all over the world and to be able to stream it live wherever you are is a huge thing.
You just gave the whole history right there of that movie, which is Chasing Grace. Now, if you are a thriller fan and you would expect to see that same genre in that movie, you won't. But, you know, at that time, I was just building an homage to my late father that ended up being more recently an homage to both of my parents because I've lost them both in that time. And so that is a beautiful thing. It's a great legacy to leave behind. To take of all of that, by the way, thank you, and put it into the next project. I would love to put this right into the, like, for instance, The Poser. I would love to turn right around and make that into not a one-off. That feels like a television series to me because the book is so dense and it takes a place over a certain period of time and it has so many different characters. I think I could probably split that into easily 7 to 10 episodes. That is what I would love to do with The Poser. And this new book coming out in November now, Devour, that would make a great one-off, I think.
I agree.
Like
wholeheartedly.
Yeah, Netflix or Apple or Amazon Prime. Any one of those three biggies would be perfect channel for that. And, you know, that's probably everyone's dream and goal. But back to an earlier conversation comment that you made, I can't not see things that way. It's like when my sister and I were talking about Devour the other day. She said that you have such an insight on how to create this story that feels like a screenplay in that I can watch this book movie in my head. And I'm like, that's just kind of how I see life.
Well, and when you watch programs or when you watch content, I think the world, the way that we watch content has also changed. You and I have had some fun kind of popping back to some old series from even the 2000s, and we kind of laughed at how slow and methodical the pace was and the overlaying of the heavy music. That people don't watch programs like that anymore. They want things to move. They want a page turner. They're not interested in watching TV or watching programs the way that they used to. It doesn't get to the end fast enough.
To the point. Yeah.
Get to the point. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's true. But our attention spans continue to shorten. And just when you think it can't get any shorter, it gets shorter. Quibi comes along. You can see a TV show in 10 minutes. And when you don't think that's short enough, then TikTok comes along and it's, what is it? 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds.
I know nothing about TikTok.
Yeah, I don't either. I've seen some. But
yes, what I do know is that it's a snippet.
Yeah. Oh, there goes Dexter out chasing trucks in the backyard. I was wondering how long it would take for him to show up on the show. Did we cover?
Well, I thought we were going to cover like 2020 stuff.
2020 stuff? What do you mean?
Coronavirus.
Oh. What if you come back just for that?
Health and all that craziness.
Here's the nice thing about Tammy and I. One of my favorite things is we started talking. When was the very first time we spoke on the phone? You're going to remember. I guarantee that.
That was Command Central. And that would have been September 25th of 2015.
See? September 25th, 2015. She's living in Midtown Manhattan, Upper West Side. I'm living in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we started speaking September 25th, and we haven't stopped. Our conversations are like this every day. We start every day with coffee and conversation, and we chat through the day. We chat on the phone. We come home, we have a little cocktail, maybe a little conversation, dinner, still chatting, and that's never gotten old.
How sweet is that?
It's super sweet.
Yeah.
There's so many places I could go with people in the past that I just could barely get through a conversation.
Well, it's a wonder you weren't an alcoholic, David.
I tried. So listen, would you promise me that you'll come back and we'll do another show?
I'm excited for Naked Monday. I think it's going to be a great venue for young writers.
I hope
nicely
so.
Nicely done.
Yeah, thank you. The music is nearly, perhaps groovier than we are.
Perhaps.
And maybe, since this is show number one and we have plenty in us, we'll get a sponsor one day.
Maybe.
Our guest has been Tammy Temple, world-renowned wife, mother, grandmother now, soon to be grandmother again, fantastic person, brilliant negotiator, fantastic estate manager, beautiful, brilliant, talented, funny as shit. Closing comments from my beautiful wife?
I'm going to pull one from the recesses of my mind.
Okay.
Be a rainbow in somebody's cloud. See if you get anyone who writes into you and can name the person who penned that quote.
Awesome. We'll see you next time on Naked Monday.
Peace.